Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Nazarita Goldhammer, Kevin Boylo. It's November 20th, the year 2023. We're right back at you for more discussion on the interrelational self and the human intimacy with nature. We've been at it for, this is the 48th show on this particular topic, almost a whole year. And I feel like we've just scratched the surface. One of the things that I can say in a very neutral way to all of our listeners is that I've become more aware in time about the complexity and simplicity of our biosphere and our ecosystems and how there are complex processes, different parts, different life forms within each ecosystem, and they all have a role to play. And so if we destroy, for example, all of the bees, then we don't have any pollinators, but therefore we probably won't have any flowers. If we don't have any flowers, we won't have any birds, or at least a number of species of birds that would feed off of those flowers. But take your pick, no matter where you live. Think about an ecosystem in your backyard, or at a park, just out of town, maybe a trail you hike. There, and you could map it out. You could actually be your own scientist. You could map out what you see and what's there, and then start to piece together how the different parts work towards a whole. And that kind of thinking has enriched my view of the interrelational self. If you think, just put it in the human world, people who are isolated or dysfunctional or in some way marginalized, split off relationships that are healthy, they don't do well. They become ill, some of them die, or they do criminal things. So it's a symphony. It's a lot of different parts working together to make the biosphere do what it does. And Nazarita, you'd read me something yesterday, and you could maybe talk about it today. But I'll put it in my own words. I'll put it in my very own experience. I won't even speak intellectually. I'll just speak in my own experience. I remember every outing, every time I've been away from humans in what we call nature, out in the forest, I can tell you what a mountain spring, a mountain creek sounds like. I know exactly what it sounds like. There's nothing else in the world that sounds like a mountain stream. Nothing. It's or the smell. The smell of a mountain stream is unbelievably pure and beautiful. Or walking up a ridge in a mountain and seeing deer scat or elk scat or even bear scat, and you understand that you're not alone, that there are other beings who travel there, other travelers who are of different species. And there is more and more and more compendiums of scientific evidence to show the similarities between life forms. Like all animals, all mammals are almost exactly alike. Humans are not that different. We're certainly not that different from other primates. We start there. We're not that different from cetaceans or elephants in terms of mental capacity. And there are people who would make the argument that we're extremely different. Well, that's just false. That's false. Look at pictures of other mammals. They have eyes. They have ears. They carry babies. They feed babies with breast milk. They usually have four limbs, two front and two back. They have an internal organ system that's very much like humans. They have a neurology that's very similar to humans. They can apprehend danger. They have all the primary emotions that humans have. They transmit culture and value to their young. And so, for the life of me, I don't understand why people engaged in this alienation of humans from the rest of nature when it goes against all the science that we have. But there are primates and there are dogs of far greater intelligence than many, if not most humans. So where I'm working from is just taking stock of how we're doing. And you would have to be dumb and blind and deaf and dead to argue against the overwhelming evidence that humans aren't doing so well on the planet. I just was reminded yesterday that we've destroyed 90% of the elephant population in the last 100 years. Elephants are very important parts of the ecosystem. But why would we do that? We did it. Nobody else did it. We did it. So what we ended up doing is destroying ecosystem. Anytime you destroy a very important part of the symphony, or eradicating bison, or eradicating wolves out of fear. And so I just start working back. We have climate change. We have global warming. We have pollution. We have massive carbon and methane being released. We have rising sea temperatures. Crime is up. Violence is up. People, billions, actually, hundreds of millions and into the billions of people are suffer food anxiety and food scarcity. We're not doing that well because we have taken too much in our speciesism, in our narcissism. And so why not? Why not revise the way we think about things? Why not revise how we think about walking into a bear's territory? Why not revise how we think about competition and the need to produce? Why not consider other options? And that means you can work with just practical intelligence, setting aside ideology and beliefs and religion and even science. And you can work with very practical, on the ground, practical knowledge. I mean, wouldn't we want to have a stronger ecosystem? Wouldn't we want to have climate that's more within a stable range? Wouldn't we want to have less pollution, less plastic pollution? Wouldn't we want to have clean water? Wouldn't we want to appreciate all of the other life forms without imprisoning them and making them suffer miserably and then slaughtering them? Wouldn't we want to appreciate wild apex predators as well as prey animals? Of course we would. You talk to children the world over, every single one of them will giggle in delight when they see the world and they experience the world. That's that interrelational self. That's more of an authentic interrelational self. And the wonder and the joy of being out on a trail in the forest, watching dogs play and cats play, watching Arctic foxes play, watching birds, even predator birds, owls, osprey, eagles. It's a wondrous world. And I'll give you an example of how out of control Fish and Wildlife Services are. They get up in Yellowstone National Park, they just slaughtered 15,000 buffalo because they decided that they had to do that. It was not based on any science at all. It was just an arbitrary number. And yet you have scientists, wildlife biologists, who dedicate 24 hours a day of their lives to understanding, came up with a very different management plan, which hopefully is going to be implemented. Peaceful coexistence is the nature of the plan. So, Nazarita, welcome. We're honing in on practical intelligence, putting aside ideologies and just thinking about survival and in the great Aristotelian tradition, living well. Welcome today.
Thank you.
What you have to say.
Thank you. It's really interesting. I've been thinking a lot along the same lines that you have about, you know, there are many religious views out there that are, some believe the earth is really sacred. American Indians believe that, you know, all of our other species are brothers and sisters. The insects are brothers and sisters. The land is sacred. And I think that part of this year's, you know, introspection is knowing that there are some who say, well, we have dominion over the earth, which means it gives us the right to take, to kill, to manipulate, to do whatever we want in our very own interest, which is such hubris to think that we're not a cog in the whole system, that we are the maker of it, which is so ludicrous. And then, you know, some think that we are caretakers, but if you look at the evidence of the way humanity is, you would have to look at that and say, what does caretaking mean? What does it mean to be a steward of the earth? You know, why do we vote for people who want to take away all safeguards from our water to allow big companies and firms to pollute the water so that we become sick? Why would we vote for them? Why would we have them even in office? Why would we dig out part of the earth which makes it toxic to other animals and to ourselves? Why would we spray pesticides on everything and then think that that's okay? So if people think that we are connected to each other and to other species, then we have to look at, what does that connection really mean? You know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving, which is such a parody of the American Indians, because it's saying that some white pilgrims who came over did a fallacy of saying that they they befriended the Indians and didn't slaughter them and didn't take away their land, that somehow they were peace-loving, which they were not. And we have to look at our own Thanksgiving right now and say, what are we thankful for? Why do we have this day where we sit down in the midst of slaughtered animals that have been tortured for our little meal and say that we're thankful, when there are people on the streets that don't have any food, that we trap and kill other species without any thought of pain or suffering, that we believe that we are fucking superior to others. And yet we have all these things that other species don't do. So I really think that, we have to really look at that. So here's a little thing, 46 million turkeys in the United States are killed every year just for Thanksgiving. So they remove the feathers and then they eviscerate through machines. They take off the head, the feet, and the internal organs. So I want to know, which part of Thanksgiving is this? Which part is a steward of the earth and other species is this? We have to ask ourselves these questions. What are we doing? Why do we think these thoughts that we're better than other species when other species don't do these horrible things? Like, why don't we use our smarts if we want to go that route and say, why don't we take care of the earth? Why are we not taking care of the people around us? Why are we not taking care of people in the street who are starving? Why do we intend to do that? And I think that's something to always ask ourselves. It's like, what is our part in this? We can't be silent. If you think you're a caretaker of the earth, you better get pesticides removed from Ace Hardware and Home Depot. You better get those pesticides removed, because as a steward of the earth, it is your obligation to take care of what you believe in. And if we don't, we're just hypocrites. Hypocrisy is rampant in the world because people believe that as long as they have their cushy life, then that's okay. You and I have talked about this before. It's Cheap Seattle. It's a rendition of his talk. And, you know, it always really strikes me, and I printed it because I wanted to see it more often than not. And part of it is what they call the white man, what the white man thinks of the earth. And I would say that this is rampant today. And this is a paraphrase. We know that the white man does not understand our ways. Our one portion of land is the same to him as the next. He is a stranger who comes in the night and takes from the land whatever he needs. The earth is not his brother, but his enemy. When he has conquered it, he moves on. He leaves his father's graves and he doesn't care. He kidnaps the earth from his children. He doesn't care. And this last, all things, he treats his mother, the earth, and his brother, the sky, as things that he can buy, plunder, and sell like sheep or bright beads. His appetite will devour the earth and leave behind only a desert. And this really gets me, because I've often thought of, you know, I don't mean to denigrate locusts, but humans are like locusts on the earth. They just kind of devour everything in their way, and then they move on to another place. And we all have a part in this, and that's why we all have to say, stop. This is not what we want to do. If you really, really believe that you are a steward of the earth and other animals, then you would do stuff to save them, to not commodify what you do, to stop eating meat and other species, because we don't have to do that. I mean, we don't have to do that. We don't have to forage in the forest and shoot animals so that we can live and survive. We have no need to do that, and yet we continue to do it. We have no need to put pesticides on our food and chemicals in our water. We have no need to do that. And so we have no need to build the way that we build, where we build with crappy materials so that other people suffer from the emissions that come, chemical emissions that come from our building materials. We have no need to wear clothing that is made from other species. We have no need to do this. And yet we continue to do it. So stewards of the earth, if you want to call it that, we have to put a stop to that. We have to stop ourselves and we have to put a stop to that. So that's part, what you were saying was really potent, because we have to look at the air, the sky, the breeze, the water, the earth, other animals, other species, and we have to really see they are intelligent, a lot more intelligent than us, and what would we do without them? What would we do? It's really sad to me to think that we are demolishing everything in our way, and we're going to find out that we're killing ourselves. We're not the species that we think is so superior. We are actually barbaric. And hopefully some of us are learning to evolve from that.
Yeah. I guess one bone I want to pick right now is a tendency of humans to prioritize etiquette, what they consider to be etiquette, over the fate of sentient beings. And there are humans right now who would rather sacrifice an animal to imprisonment and torture and the absolute worst nightmare of a life that you can possibly imagine. No escape, pain and suffering every single moment of every day of their life, and then they're violently killed. And yet, people won't speak up to their friends, their associates, their acquaintances, family members, because they're afraid of offending them in some way. Or they have some silly goose idea that it's not for them to say. And I would say, if it's not for you to say, who is it? It can't be just left up to the brave and the courageous. It can't. We all have a responsibility to say the truth. So if I see a wrong and I don't right it, if I don't right a wrong by saying it, by calling it for what it is, by interceding or intervening, then I've lost an opportunity to be a responsible, morally justified adult. And I basically remain a child. I've had to really ponder that over the years, Nazarita. The people who just don't want to take responsibility, and they find all kinds of reasons. They're very good at it. It's a deflection. These are avoidance strategies. And avoidance in psychology or in psychoanalysis is one of the two primitive defenses. There's two. One is denial, and the other one is avoidance. And these are the primitive psychological defenses of children. And so people will look for any way out. But what's so significant is that every time you do that, an animal dies, an animal suffers, an animal gets beaten to death, kicked around, raped. And there are people, Nazarita and to all of our listeners, who they will claim to be good people and good moral people. They will claim to be nonviolent. They will claim to be spiritual. They will claim to be religious. And yet they participate in violence of the worst sort. If people, it's really true, if people could look inside a slaughterhouse, if people could look inside a feedlot, if people could look inside any prison camp of sentient beings that are being held to be exploited, to be used, to be murdered, they might change. It's possible that that's true. But I do ask people from time to time, hey, would you like to watch a video? Would you like to see? Would you like to see with your own two eyes what's really going on? It is. It's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. And we do that, and we continue to do it because people don't want to take responsibility. It's really hard to argue. It's very difficult to argue that we should torture and imprison and rape animals for our own gain in some way. Many dog breeding operations are like that, where they've even designed contraptions that they force a female dog into a contraption where she cannot move and she's raped over and over and over until her back legs are broken and sometimes her pelvis. And she is forced to carry a litter in extreme pain. And then she heals with whatever scar tissue there is. And it happens all over again until she is so tired and so beat up that in many, if not most cases, they're thrown into a trash heap. I know this to be true. They often don't have names. They don't get any exercise. They get no human love of any kind. Farm animals. Pigs go into slaughter at 3 months. Chickens at a month to 3 months. Cows. And what gets me, it's something you pointed out just earlier today. We don't need to eat animals. And we don't need to wear them. That's a fact. Again, let's rely on practical knowledge. It's absolutely true. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I'm stronger than I've ever been. And I'm a vegan. And I know a lot of vegans who are strong and healthy. We don't have to eat meat. We don't have to imprison people, animal people. We don't have to do that. And so all that aside, if you start this conversation from a completely different place and go out on the internet, I invite every one of you to go out on the internet and look at how much water and food it takes to grow imprisoned animals for slaughter. Look at the inefficiency. Rather than serving people good plant-based food, we fatten animals up and then we kill them. But just go out and do the research. It's extremely inefficient. And as the human population increases, 8 billion, 9 billion, 10 billion, we're going to take more and more land to be able to feed those animals that we would slaughter. And as we take the land, we take forest land, which means we take carbon sinks. We take forests whose very purpose is to hold carbon. And so one of the great outcomes is that we have so messed with climate. We did it. God didn't do it. The planet didn't do it. We did it. And it's just going to be worse. People are already really, really troubled about overheating of the planet and forest fires. And so I have this image, Nazarita, of a family eating hamburgers in wildfire country. It could be Washington, Oregon, California, wherever, Utah. They're sitting there at the dinner table. They're smacking their lips on steak or chicken or beef, and they're complaining about the wildfire season coming. And they're complaining about global warming and how it's hotter. And they're engaged at that moment in the exact activity that increases global warming. This is not debatable anymore. For somebody who would dispute that, that would mean that they're a very uneducated, very unintelligent person, because this is a fact. So take out the whole moral equation of the animal and just put in its place the scientific fact that eating meat and dairy continues to be an inefficient use of our resources, and it's destroying, it's putting us more and more out of balance as we destroy more waterways, and more forest land. How do you reconcile that, Nazarita? How do you understand people who act in obviously self-destructive ways?
Well, we've often talked about this, and we've tried to bring up some gruesome realities so that people actually can tell what it is that they're doing. Like really understand. It's kind of like that same which you just quoted, which was if a slaughterhouse had glass walls, nobody would eat meat. And that is really true. So, you know, because I'm focused on this, because I realize that right now we're in the midst of some huge destruction of turkeys and other sentient animals for someone's, you know, half hour meal on a day they're supposed to be giving Thanksgiving. So you know, I looked up a few things because it really gets me. I just feel like why are we not able to see these things? So turkeys are slaughtered between 9 weeks old and 21 weeks old, but their natural lifespan is 10 years. So when people say, well, they die anyway, or they're giving their life for us so we can have Thanksgiving, it's absolutely hypocrisy. So we have to understand that. So here's Butterball. You know, the old Butterball turkey, if you want to give a gift, give them some big Butterball turkey or something for Thanksgiving as a symbol of your gratitude that you've murdered another animal so that, you know, you could feel good about what you're eating. So Butterball, this is how Butterball turkeys are killed. They hang the turkeys up. Remember, they're between 9 and 12 weeks. They're babies. They hang them by their feet. Now they're still alive. They shock them in electrified water so that they become paralyzed. It isn't that they don't feel pain. They're paralyzed. It's like someone having an operation that they're paralyzed, but they can still feel every single thing that goes on. That's what they do to turkeys. They put them in electrified water so that they're paralyzed. They still feel pain. And then they slit their throats. Remember, slitting your throat doesn't mean that you're immediately dead. And then they run them through a tank of scalding hot water for defeathering. That is your Thanksgiving dinner that you are putting herbs and stuffing into the very internal organs of a turkey. And then you're cooking it, and then you're giving thanks for it. This is the hypocrisy of humans. This is what is the hubris of humans, to think that they're better than other species, that they can torture, mutilate, and kill them. and then say that they're giving thanks. Like, this is the ultimate hypocrisy. We are good people. We pray, we go to church, we give thanks, we do all these things, and yet we're torturing animals and then saying that's what we're giving thanks for. That is the height of hypocrisy, and that's what we do to the earth. That's what we do to ourselves. And you brought up an interesting point. You said, why don't people speak up? There's another reason why a lot of people feel like they shouldn't speak up. It's because they know that other humans are barbaric. They are fearful of other humans because other humans will torture and kill them for another viewpoint, for saying what everybody should know, that it isn't violence that should be accepted, but peace. People who are vegan, people who eschew not eating meat or killing animals are not radical. The people who are kill, torture, maim, and eat other species, they're the ones to be afraid of. And that is a fear, because look at them. They're everywhere. They want to kill whatever viewpoint doesn't match their own. And they will kill you for being peaceful, which is the truth. We are a barbaric species. And if we keep going, which we are on that path, we will be eliminated from the earth. And it isn't, you know, it's a very real thing. So, you know, I think that the earth has sentience. And what I think is funny is that a lot of American Indians were saying, how can you buy and sell the earth? And I think what's really interesting is there's lots of active volcanoes now coming to life. And I think all the people that bought their property on the side of a volcano that hasn't gone off for like 200 years is now, they're what they purchased is gone because these volcanoes are erupting. And the earth rebels. The earth rebels. Orcas are rebelling. Other species are becoming aware that humans are violent, and humans are to be feared, and humans are to be fought because of what we do to the earth and to other species.
Well, yeah, and so here we are. What people don't realize is that, I guess, Nazarita, that what they don't realize is the effect of their behavior. You know, people want to wave a wand and pretend like there's no pollution due to slaughter, no global warming, no pain, no suffering. It's a human capacity to lie to themselves. It's called mendacity, being mendacious or self-deceptive. And, you know, I remember talking to somebody about, oh gosh, 7 or 8 years ago, and she had this idea of a bucolic farm in which you could raise animals and have this humane dairy system and this humane slaughter operation. The problem with that way of thinking is that you've already assumed that it's your right to take another being's life. You know, I know what it's like to work at a dairy. I used to work at a dairy. Dairy cows are treated very poorly. They're basic milking machines. So, and now that we have the capitalist motivation, right, which is seems to override everything else, you can't have an operation without thinking about money. And that's when you end up with these agricultural farms, the big farms. And you're actually right. So a lot of times, turkeys and other poultry, chickens, and other fowl, when their necks are cut, it doesn't feel good. And there are humans who will try to dupe you into thinking that they're somehow okay to cut the neck of another being. It's like, what if somebody did that to you? This is the empathy exercise. This is the role reversal. What if somebody took your children and slit their neck and scalded them in 145 degree water to eat? Well, you'd think that was very bizarre. You would give it a name, cannibalism, and you'd think all kinds of things. But in reality, there's nothing different. I mean, there's no difference between eating a human being and eating an animal, really. They're both sentient beings. They both produce flesh on their body. It's just that we have culture that says that that's wrong, and we have various religious beliefs that says that that's wrong. So what we're struggling here with is intimacy. So Nazarita, maybe you could make some final comments about what it means to be intimate with the land and what it means to be intimate with other beings. That would be really helpful.
I'll try to just give expression to what I feel about that. So to be intimate with someone means that I think of it as transparent, as you don't have fear in sharing, that you know that there's kind of unconditional love. And if we really had that intimacy with nature, we wouldn't think that we had to prune it, or that we had to control it. And that's the same with animals. It's like if we really thought that animals were species that had intelligence, cared and loved and felt pain, we wouldn't torture them. We absolutely would not do it. If you could look at a crow and realize that a crow had brothers and sisters and family and was looking for food, you absolutely would not do anything to hurt it, because you would know. You would know that would be appalling. It's like, why would you do that to someone that you know? Why would you cause them pain if you didn't have to? So I think if we turn our thoughts and our hearts more toward discovering what our kinship is, why we are this thread in this great garment of life, how we are interrelated, then I think that we will have more love and compassion, and we will stop killing. We will stop violence. We will stop wars. We will stop doing things that harm others, harm the earth, and harm other species.
Well, I guess what I'd like to say, because we have Thanksgiving coming right up, is I hope and pray. And when I say pray, I don't mean to a God. I mean to yourself. I hope with everything that I am, that we find a way to speak for nonviolence. We find a way to speak for the less fortunate. We find a way to speak for the vulnerable and the voiceless. We find a way to not support cruelty to animals, that we speak out, and that we also refuse to sit at a table that is serving meat. We don't need the violence. We'll be back next week. Take care, everybody. This is Epis Radio signing out.